Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. What a big night in the NBA. It is the last regular season game. By the way, Tim Frazier of the New Orleans Pelicans will be here on Saturday at the Blue-White game. And it's rare that you get to the last night of the regular season and have two incredible moments in the NBA like they have tonight. Kobe Bryant plays his final game as the Lakers are in action this evening. And, of course, Golden State goes after the Lakers, by the way, are facing the Utah Jazz tonight. And that's at the Staples Center. And Golden State at Oracle tonight will host the Memphis Grizzlies going after a league record 73rd victory on the season. How much are the tickets for the two big games tonight? Of course, the Lakers-Utah game, only because it's Kobe Bryant's last game, is a big game. It is totally inconsequential. The Lakers have won 16 games this season. They are 16-65. Painful. But here we go. The price for tonight's game. Here's the get-in price. $339 for Memphis and Golden State up in Oakland. For the Lakers in Utah, the base is $740. The average price to get into the Golden State-Memphis game tonight is $550. The average price people are paying tonight for the Kobe Bryant-Laker-Utah game is $1,001. The most paid to see Golden State try to set the record tonight with Memphis is $5,200 for a ticket. The most paid for tonight's game in Staples between Utah and the Lakers for Kobe Bryant's final game is $27,500. How about that? So, history tonight on the line, Golden State and Memphis at 10:30. It's on ESPN. And on ESPN2 tonight, Kobe Bryant's final game as they take on the Utah Jazz. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
3-2 pitch. There's a high drive deep to left center field. Way back there, still going. And goodbye! Another one for Trevor Brown. More of a line drive homer, but back over the 390-foot marker in left center. And now it is 7-2 Giants.
That's the great John Miller on KMBR and the Giants radio network last night as Trevor Brown hit a pair of home runs. That two-run homer put the Giants on top 7-2 over Colorado in the eighth inning last night as the Giants went on to win. John Miller with our play-by-play call of the day. Big issue in college football right now is satellite camps. The NCAA made its ruling last week on satellite camps. And we bring in Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. Adam, welcome. Great to have you with us. What was your take on what the NCAA ruled?
Well, yeah, I spoke to the Division I Council Chair, Jim Phillips, also the Northwestern Athletic Director, and the Big Ten representative. So he was in a pretty tough spot having to chair this group. There was a lot of debate. I think what was interesting was that there were more leagues than just the SEC and ACC that opposed this. There are 10 leagues represented on that council, and they had to obviously have a majority. So some group of five leagues voted against this, which is very surprising because everyone talks about Michigan and Penn State and these high-profile schools holding satellite camps in the South and other recruit-rich territories. But these camps were very valuable for coaches from the group of five that didn't have the resources to go seven different places. They just go to one camp and get in touch with some of these recruits that were at their level. It's also really good for some recruits. Instead of having to travel to all corners of the country. They could go to one or two places and interact with these coaches from multiple teams. So I think it's definitely a bad day for a lot of recruits. It's a good day for the SEC and the ACC and, you know, kind of protecting their talent in the South.
All right. And you mentioned there's a lot of debate about this. Now, something the other there's another part to this as well. Some coaches, Jim Harbaugh was going to go, I think, to Baylor, Iowa State, and one or two other places. Urban Meyer was as well. That also has been banned, correct?
Right, yeah. I mean, you can't do anything off campus now. So, you know, everything has to be, you know, you can have a camp, but, you know, it has to be your coaches on your campus with those prospects. So, you know, these doing things in conjunction. You know, and actually, to his credit, Arkansas coach Brett Bielema was going to do, I believe, a satellite camp with Rutgers. If this had been upheld and the SEC would have started allowing satellite camps. So there would have been all these tandem camps with schools from multiple conferences, but now none of that's happening. You know, there'll be the regular camps that you have at Penn State or Michigan or Baylor or Arkansas, but the only coaches that'll be there will be the coaches from that program.
And the camp at Penn State is a long-standing camp, and I think it was one of those that I think showed some people around the country that if you run your own camp, it actually could be a big plus for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one part that's not in here is the Michigan IMG part. When you talked to Jim Phillips, was that something that came up in conversation?
So here's what happened, Steve. You know, that question, that issue...
It's
a separate issue, and it'll be addressed at the NCAA convention next year. The frustrating part for the Big Ten folks, including Jim Phillips, is that initially the satellite camps were also going to be part of a larger review. They want to basically come out with one blanket policy that addresses all these things: satellite camps, spring practices off campus, or the recruiting calendar, staff size, you know, all these issues that we talk about. Instead of doing these one-offs, and you know what basically happened here is that, you know, because, you know, Michigan made such a splash last year, Penn State to a lesser degree, and you had these camps scheduled in the summer, you know, the leagues like the SEC and the ACC thought they'd be at a disadvantage if they if something wasn't done. So they basically rushed the vote on this issue. So the vote on the off-campus spring practices will take place at the 2017 NCAA convention. Now, from what I've been told, I would be stunned if that also isn't banned. And I think that has more widespread support to ban it than this issue. So I think that's going to be a one-off in a sense for Jim Harbaugh, that they won't be at IMG next spring, and nobody will be at IMG next spring.
Interesting. All right, now let's get to the spring practices themselves. What kind of feel do you have? I mean, look, teams are going to try and get better this time of the year. You and I both know that. You're also, for every great play a guy makes, there's somebody else that's not going to look so good on tape. What kind of feel do you have about the Big Ten in the spring?
Well, you know, a lot of schools have, you know, questions, which is typical. You know, quarterback competitions around the league, there's a lot of new coordinators, some new coaches. So that's always interesting. I spoke with Joe Moorhead a few days ago about Penn State and their situation. Visited with Drew Merringer, the new offensive coordinator at Rutgers. So that's always sort of what dominates the spring. You know, I was at Northwestern yesterday just watching them practice, but they haven't had any coaching changes and they don't have a quarterback change. So it's kind of a ho-hum spring and let's not have anyone get hurt. But I think that's more the exception in the league. You know, Michigan's kind of in the same boat. They're already done with their spring session. It seemed like it was a good one for them, but you know, they have most of their roster back other than the quarterback, and that's going to be an interesting competition there. You know, Wilson Spite, he really made a move this spring. Everyone thought it was going to be likely John O'Korn, the transfer from Houston, who was going to take hold of that job, but I think that's very much an open competition going into the summer and into fall camp. So, you know, other than that, it's been fairly, you know, quiet around the league. Some teams are only really getting going now, and then some obviously are starting to wrap up with their spring games.
You mentioned you had a conversation with Joe Moorhead. What were a couple of things that struck you in the interview you had with him?
Right. Well, you know, as you guys know, you know, the pass protection's been an issue over the years, but I think they're, at least in recent years, it's going to be a lot easier for this offensive line to function in this offense. So, you know, once they get it down, the rhythm, obviously it's going to be at a faster pace, but I think what he's asking of his quarterbacks is to get the ball out, is to not hold the ball as long as Christian Hackenberg did. And I think ultimately the sacks are going to go down, and they're going to be operating at just a completely different tempo. They have a very good wide receiving core coming back. I think those guys are going to fit in nicely to the system. They obviously have an accomplished running back. The quarterbacks, he seems pleased with their abilities. Now who emerges, that's still, I think, a ways away. But I think at least the two guys that are practicing right now, he feels are capable of running this offense, but it's definitely going to look different for Penn State fans. The tempo is the thing that's going to jump out. And I think in some ways, James Franklin's been recruiting to that even in, even with Hackenberg and in the previous coordinator. So, I actually am more optimistic about Penn State's offense this year if that line can hold up. But I just think the nature of the system will make it easier on that.
Well, in fact, the system, to be honest with you, I mean, I think I would probably know, it fits these two kids a lot better anyway. I mean, the timing for them couldn't be any better with having him here.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think just hearing him say something to the effect, just sort of paraphrasing, but, you don't want to have three hitches before you throw the ball. If it's not there on your second hitch, throw it out of bounds.
Right.
And some coaches, I know Bill Kubis, he was at Illinois, wanted the ball out, I think, in 2.2 seconds, and some coaches wanted it 2.4 or whatever. You know, Joe doesn't have a specific time, but, you know, his main thing is, you know, with the footwork that we ask of you, you know, we don't want you sitting back there, you know, scanning the field for 4 seconds to get sacked. I mean, that's just going to be, more of the same that we've seen from Penn State. They're just not good enough to afford negative plays. Really, no offense is. And I think they're going to have to score this year. I mean, the defense should be, you know, okay, but they did lose some key pieces on that side of the ball. I think they're going to have to put up more points, especially in the division, with the division being so strong.
Well, the division is very strong, but one of those teams that has to replace a lot of people, but they're very talented, is Ohio State. They have a lot of people to replace, but he also played a lot of people. So what kind of read did you get on them?
Yeah, you know, I haven't talked to too many folks there, but I know that, you know, the offensive line is a big priority for Urban, with losing some of the pieces that they did from last year's team. But the interesting thing for that line is, you know, entering the year where they won the national title, I believe they only had one or zero starters back.
One.
So it's a group with
one back. Yeah,
right. So, you know, they have history of being able to reload there. And one thing that I just, you know, again, not every coach has this luxury, but one thing I love about what Urban does is that he plays freshmen. He plays true freshmen. You don't come there to redshirt. You come there to play. And that should set them up to handle, you know, this exodus of NFL talent, you know, better than some programs. I mean, it was more than I thought, Steve. I guess you agree, a number of guys that left early. But, if any program can keep going at a high level and continue to compete for a championship, it's Ohio State. And they have JT Barrett back. So I think some of the issues that they had early last season on offense, shouldn't be there if the line can hold up, if guys can develop at receiver and running back. Very interested to see how the running back competition works out there in Columbus.
Yeah, in fact, I agree with every statement you made about that right across the board. They do have, to withstand. You know, they have the talent. He does play everybody. He doesn't mess around and redshirt a lot of guys. It's just not his style.
A lot of guys recruited at a high level and still redshirt. That's fine. And some guys just aren't ready. Maybe they're ready physically, but they're not ready emotionally. But Urban, that's his recruiting pitch, is, hey, even if you're a lineman, you can come in here and play as a true freshman, and that's worked to their advantage.
Michigan State's in an interesting spot because I don't think people realize how much they lost along the way. Now, he also played a lot of people along the way himself, but what's your read on Michigan State?
Yeah, I'm interested to talk to more folks up there and maybe get up there and see them work out, because this is, again, that sort of test. You know, is Michigan State have staying power with how they've recruited and developed players over time? Because they do lose, best receiver, record-setting quarterback, maybe the best quarterback in team history in Connor Cook, offensive linemen that are going to go to the NFL like Jack Conklin, Jack Allen. Defensively, Shalique Calhoun finally is out of the program. It seems like he played for about 10 years in the Big Ten. But, they do have some interesting parts coming back. I think Malik McDowell may be the best defensive player in the Big Ten this year at defensive tackle.
Yeah.
So, their reputation on that side of the ball. Receiver will be a spot to watch because they've had some really good couple of years at wide receiver, but if anyone remembers the 2012 season and the early part of 2013, they were horrible at that position. So you know, guys are going to have to emerge there to help the new starting quarterback, who will be either Tyler O'Connor or Damian Terry. And right now it seems like O'Connor is in the lead. You know, I know the fans are sort of hopeful, a lot of Michigan State fans, that Damian Terry will win that job because he's such a great athlete, and they haven't had that type of look at quarterback for a while, but they still are what they are on offense. And I think Tyler O'Connor, you know, his skill set and his experience, including the win in Columbus last year, even though they didn't ask him to do a whole lot, I think in some ways he does still fit better with what they want to do in their vision.
How tough a blow was it for DJ Durkin to lose Scott Schaefer at this particular time? I realize it's not, you know, it's not September, but still.
Yeah, it's never ideal, especially, you know, so late in the game. And, you know, he was able to make a hire quickly with Andy Boo, who has some coordinator experience, not the best coordinator experience recently, did not have much success at Cal or Nevada, but has a little bit of Big Ten experience on Gary Anderson's staff at Wisconsin. I believe he was with Gary, unless he was with Brett at the end. He may have been with Brett. But you know, being able to bring in someone with experience certainly helps. I just, you know, Scott Schaefer was an excellent defensive coach, had head coaching experience, which would have been a great resource for DJ Durkin as a first-time head coach. Now, he still has two coaches on his staff who were FBS head coaches last year, and Mike London and Pete Lembo. So still a lot of good resources for him on the staff. But, you know, Scott Schaefer would have been great to have around as well.
Adam, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the time you gave us, especially on a day where a lot of news was made.
Appreciate it, Steve.
Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. Let's get you up to date on the scoreboard here. The Mets did beat the Marlins today 2-1. That's now a final. The Angels and Oakland are scoreless in the bottom of the second. And also in the bottom of the second, Texas and Seattle are scoreless. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK with a 6:35 airtime tonight, it's the Phillies and the Padres. Our thanks to Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, for joining us. We'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Get outside and clean up the yard.
Yes, dear.
Springtime means cleanup time.
Even at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see you in Kia.
It's the Spring Cleanup Sales Event at Sunbury Motors Kia. SMC has 95 new Kias all clean-out priced.
Just listen.
A 2015 Rio LX. SMC has 4 clean-up priced at $13,999. 2015 Optima LXs. Clean-up price starting at only $18,999. And there's 3 2016 Sportage LXs.
Starting at just $19,999.
Plus, Sunbury Motors Kia has 0% financing available for up to 66 months on these vehicles. And all come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty.
It's Spring Cleanup. Up sales event
going on now at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
SMC,
selling more cars, satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Tax and tax access, special financing to all qualified customers through CAMAT. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Okay, so in 1996, 20 years ago, who was drafted ahead of Kobe Bryant? Now remember this. The Lakers did not draft Kobe Bryant. The Charlotte Hornets drafted Kobe Bryant, 13th overall. And then they traded him that night for Vlade Divac. So who was selected ahead of him before the Hornets made the selection of Kobe Bryant? Cleveland at number 12, Vitaly Potapenko. Center, they eventually traded him to the Celtics. Had 20 points or better in a game 8 times in his career. Right now, Cavs assistant director for player development. Todd Fuller was the 11th overall pick in the draft. Todd Fuller out of NC State, big guy, 6'11". Right? Guy averaged over 21 points a game in college. All right. Limited career, averaged 4 points a game. And that was it. Currently going after his master's degree in analytics at NC State. Says he barely follows the NBA. However, he did hear that Kobe was retiring. Next up on the list, the number 10 overall pick, Eric Dampier out of Mississippi State. Sort of a strong, powerful guy coming out of school, right? So he gets selected. And what I think was, I'm trying to think who drafted Dampier. Dampier was drafted by Indiana Pacers. So they select him. Dampier, of course, ends up with a limited NBA career. I know you're shocked. Not particularly spectacular. He did last 16 years in the league. He actually did last 16 years. But was not an impact player in the league. Shaquille O'Neal used to lambaste him and refer to him as Erica Dampier. Who are the other nine selected in front of Kobe Bryant? Oh, it's quite a list. First overall, though, would still be the first overall today. Because he's been elected to the Hall of Fame. And remember, Kobe Bryant was coming out of Lower Merion High School, no college. And yes, he was drafted by the Charlotte Hornets, not by the Lakers. And that night, traded by the Hornets to the Lakers for Vlade Divac.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I know Tom Mertz in the game will be out on May 4th. They always are at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club for the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. The Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament has openings in the afternoon flight, morning flight. Sign up now. Get your foursome involved. We want to see you 3 weeks from today at the beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club. It is a circle date for me every year. It'll be the fifth straight year I've played in the tournament. I love it. And we'll have the show out there as well. Sean and Kevin will be out there signing autographs as I set things up. Just kidding. Okay. The sports bozo of the day is I'm going with Jim Harbaugh, but for this reason. Hugh Freeze put out a tweet about the satellite camps and basically saying, hey, look, this frees us up to have a little more time with our family, a little time off. And Harbaugh then tweeted about, you know, you can tell who wants to work and who doesn't want to work or something like that. I don't know Hugh Freeze at all. I've never been in the same room with him, to my knowledge. I just, you know, I know he was portrayed in the movie about Michael Orr. As the coach, but remember, any guy that has toiled as a high school football coach and then also toiled as a high school girls basketball coach has worked their way up to get to this point, had to have worked hard. You don't sit there and start fooling around with somebody else's work ethic. Yeah, I don't like that. That's classless. And we all, you know, we all praise Jim Harbaugh for how hard he works. Well, other people work hard, too. And they also do it in different ways. All right. Let's get back. Kobe Bryant retires tonight. It's a big night for the NBA because we don't usually talk about the NBA, but Golden State's going after history tonight. They're going after their 73rd win. They've got Memphis tonight. And Kobe Bryant plays his final game. Well, Kobe Bryant was drafted 13th overall in the NBA draft by the Charlotte Hornets and then traded that night by the Hornets to the Lakers for Vlade Divac. So who was picked in front of him? I already told you number 12 was Cleveland. They took the big center, Vitaly Potapenko. And Golden State took the center out of NC State, Todd Fuller. Neither one of them panned out. Potapenko was in the league for maybe, what, a dozen years? It was with four different teams, the Celtics, the Sonics. I think the Kings as well as the Cavs. Fuller just isn't, I mean, he got out quickly. I mentioned number 10, Indiana took Eric Dampier, who actually played in the league for 16 years. And, you know, but 16 years, at least you lasted. I mean, that means something. Number nine was Dallas, that took Samaki Walker out of Louisville. And he actually was a decent role player with the Lakers, of all teams. And he helped, along with Kobe Bryant, is on the Kobe Bryant team that won the title in 2002. Now, he hit a buzzer beater in Game 4 of the 2002 Western Conference Finals against the Sacramento Kings, which helped lead the NBA to eventually use instant replay to review all end-of-period shots. So Samaki Walker actually has a slight legacy. Number 8 was New Jersey. They took the guard Kerry Kittles out of Villanova. Kittles had a great NCAA tournament that year, if you recall. And John Calipari was the coach. And Calipari decided he wanted Kittles, who played college ball, instead of Brian, who was playing high school ball. Kittles is still the all-time leading scorer at Villanova after his four-year career. He played 8 seasons in the league and helped the Nets get to the finals against the Lakers and the Spurs, in which they lost both. Right now, he has become a banker on Wall Street after retiring. Not doing bad. The Clippers picked Lorenzen Wright out of Memphis with the 7th overall pick. And his career lasted 13 years. He started probably half the games that he played in along the way. His career ended in 2009. He disappeared for 10 days in 2010 before his body was discovered in the woods near his ex-wife's home in Tennessee. And at the age of 34, he was dead, and to this day, they don't know how he died. Celtics at number 6 took Antoine Walker. And Rick Pitino was then with the Celtics, and he drafted him. Walker ended up having a really good 12-year career. But the last 5 years, after playing with the Celtics for a while and doing pretty well, the last 5 years, he was traded 6 times. And he was on the Miami Heat team that won the 2006 title, the one with Dwayne Wade, Shaquille O'Neal. But Walker was a good player. Not the Kobe Bryant standard, but Walker was a good player. The 5th overall pick was the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they took Ray Allen. Kind of hard to quibble about that one. Out of UConn, Big East Player of the Year, and great shooter. He is the all-time NBA leader in three-point shots made. He's the all-time three-point hit guy. And he did not play a game, by the way, for the T-Wolves because he was traded by the T-Wolves to the Bucks, which we'll get to in a moment. He then eventually got to Seattle, and then the Celtics traded for him, and he was pivotal in helping the Celtics win the NBA title. And then eventually went to the Miami Heat, and he hit the big shot in Game 6, the miraculous shot, and the Heat ended up winning the series, and that was, the shot was a big reason why. Milwaukee, with the 4th pick, took Stephon Marbury, and then they traded Marbury for Allen. And Marbury, I saw Marbury play twice in college. I saw him play in the Cable Car Classic. He was playing for Georgia Tech. And they played a game against Bradley first night. Penn State played Santa Clara, and Santa Clara had Steve Nash. And Dan Earle, that was the famous night where Dan Earle completely outplayed Steve Nash. Earle had 19 points, 7 assists, 5 or 6 rebounds. Nash had like 10 points and like 3 assists in the game. And Danny just outplayed him. And then Bradley Marbury played a terrible game. Selfish. Completely selfish. I walked away that night from the game was at the Shark Tank where the San Jose Sharks play in San Jose. I walked out of the arena that night. And I thought, geez, Marbury's even more selfish than I heard. Well, the next night, the game for third place was Santa Clara with Steve Nash and Georgia Tech with Stephon Marbury. And the two of them put on an absolute show. It was great basketball to watch. It was high-level point guard hoops at 20 paces. And Nash and Santa Clara won. But Marbury and Nash both played great. Penn State won the tournament, by the way. They beat Bradley by 3. I want to say 72-69, 74-71, something like that, right in that neighborhood. And all four teams, by the way, made the NCAA tournament that year. Marbury had, obviously, a good, not great NBA career. His tenure with the Knicks was one where he was difficult in the locker room. And ended up going to China and won 3 titles there. The number 3 overall pick, the Vancouver Grizzlies. That's right, Vancouver Grizzlies. They're now the Memphis Grizzlies who play Golden State tonight. They took Sharif Abdul-Rahim out of Cal. Pac-10 Player of the Year at Cal. And they wanted to put in with Bryant Big Country Reeves, who had been their first pick ever when they were an expansion team. Raheem didn't do much with Vancouver. And they traded him to Atlanta for a guy named Pau Gasol. And Raheem ended up with Sacramento, where he played really well. Finally retired at 31. But when he was with Abdul-Rahim at Sacramento, he played really well. Not obviously to Kobe's level, but played well. The second overall pick was Toronto. They took Marcus Camby out of UMass. And, you know, he just brought UMass to the Final Four. Of course, they had to vacate that because he accepted money and jewelry and things like that. He had a long career in the NBA. Joined the Knicks. He was with the Nuggets for a period of time. Never a star, but still had a good NBA career. He was the Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA in 2007 with the Nuggets. Made the All-Defensive Team 4 times. 10 years in the league and was rock solid. Never an awesome, incredible, off-the-charts player, but very, very good. And the first overall player picked in the draft that year, that Kobe Bryant was picked 13th, just was named to the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, Allen Iverson. And AI was the MVP of the league. He almost single-handedly got the Sixers to the final one year. And I told you the story about his car the other day, didn't I? Did I mention that story? When we were in Philly, Sean?
I don't think you did, no.
Dick Girardi was taking Jeff Tarman to be around Philly. Now, look, it's Dick's town, so I mean Jeff and I have also been there a ton of times. But we went out to eat at Joe's Steaks. We all wanted cheesesteaks. So we're driving back, and Dick says, yeah, there's the Philly Art Museum. There's the Rocky statue. And, of course, the three blind guys were all looking out there. It was dark. None of us could see it. Now, I've seen it before. So it's like I've seen it several times before. And so it's no big deal. But it was funny how the three of us kept looking, and we couldn't see it. So we go around Logan Circle, and we come out of Logan Circle, and then, you know, we swing by Roman Catholic high school where Carr Bostic and Stevens, of course, were in the middle of playing their senior year. We go past the Daily News, the old Daily News building. And then Dick makes a right, and then we're heading back toward the hotel, which is across the Schuylkill on the Penn campus. And there's this parking garage on the right at a hotel. It's adjacent to a hotel. And Dick says to us, you know what? We've never been able to confirm it. Never been able to confirm it. But the rumor's been heavy for years that Allen Iverson has a car in there. It's been parked there for over 8 years and hasn't moved. Imagine having... Now, we know that he's gone through terrible financial problems, but imagine at one point in your life having so much money that you parked a car someplace and you never moved it. That's one of many Allen Iverson stories. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Get outside and clean up the yard.
Yes, dear.
Springtime means cleanup time.
Even at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Want to see you in Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
It's the Spring Cleanup Sales Event at Sunbury Motors Kia. SMC has 95 new Kias all cleanup priced.
Just listen.
A 2015 Rio LX. SMC has 4 cleanup priced at $13,999.
2015 Optima LXs. Cleanup price starting at only $18,999.
And there's 3 2016 Sportage LXs.
Starting at just $19,999.
Plus, Sunbury Motors Kia has 0% financing available for up to 66 months on these vehicles. And all come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty.
It's Spring Cleanup. Cleanup sales event
going on now at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
SMC,
selling more cars, satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Tax and tax access, special financing to all qualified customers. The CAMAT warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Can't leave out the fact that statewide, the opening day of trout season is Saturday. Now, the regional trout season already opened and did so back in the second. Adams, Berks, Bucks, Chester, Cumberland, Dauphin, Delaware, Franklin, Juniata, Lancaster, Lebanon, Lehigh, Montgomery, Northampton, Perry, Philadelphia, Schuylkill, and York counties. But the rest of the state opens up, including our area, opens up on Saturday. And there's nothing like watching Sean fill out an insurance form after hooking himself. So,
did that once when I was a kid. It's a true story.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Young and foolish.
My brother and I used to go out all the time. And there are a couple areas where we could, and this is in Connecticut. It wasn't here in Pennsylvania. We'd fish the Scannick River. There was an area called Mill Pond, and we were able to fish Mill Pond. Mill Pond was a place that we were actually able to get some fish. Scannick River, we got nothing. Zero. I'm telling you. Somebody went in and took them all before we got there. But, we each had a rod and reel. And my dad loved fishing very much. I haven't gone fishing in a long time. Now, I've gone deep sea fishing. Deep sea fishing has been fun. Long Island Sound and off Cape Cod, I've done that. Been able to get blues, cod. And then, of course, the usual assortment of dogfish and sea robins, which have all been tossed back. And I always love when you go on one of those party boats and somebody snags a shark. Yeah, a sand shark. And they tangle up every single line on the side of the boat. Like, you're like, yeah, this is a lot of fun. But, when I was younger, I went, I went fishing all the time. And we'd fish for it. Yeah. Trout, bass, perch, pumpkin seeds. I got a fair amount of those in my lifetime. Oh, pumpkin seed, toss it back. So, but yeah, the opening day of trout season is Saturday. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, it will be a beautiful morning for that. And it'll be, I usually take I usually take Route 64 before I get on 99 before going to the stadium. I'll do that Saturday for the blue-white game, and I'll kind of look down and see who all will be out there dropping their lines after 8 o'clock. That's always fun to see.
Absolutely. So 6 a.m. Excuse me. It's going to be 8 a.m.? 8 a.m., I think, is when you're supposed to start.
Yep. Same time the lots will be opening at Beaver Stadium on Saturday.
Yep, 8 a.m. So, and the regular, so, I mean, that's great. Minimum size, by the way, they say is 7 inches. Now, I say that, and then I'll tell you that nobody's actually going to go out there and check. And, of course, I'd be out there, and they'd be like, sorry. Where'd you come from? But I don't think I'll be trout fishing. I think Mr. Ham and I will be, along with Joe Putnam on the game. I referred earlier to Ron Moeller as the swing doctor. And the mole man texted me back. He said, quote, I am Mr. Ham's Butch Harmon, which is true. And Moeller has helped me with my swing. But he definitely is Jack's swing doctor, no doubt. He said, I was down south with Mr. Weeby. He had me fitted for a new driver. All right. Which is great. So, and in fact, he went down to the Masters with Russ Rose, and Tim Curley went with him, and there you go. See, that's what we're going to do. We're going to hook up Ron Moeller with Kevin Herr. If he can cure that, he makes Butch Harmon look like a piker.
A video blog will have to be required for this at WKOK.com. No doubt about it.
Mole man, swing doctor. Believe me, and he is. And Jack, like in the middle of the round, Jack will look at Ron. What am I doing? I look over. No coaching.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.